turn your whisper into a shout with Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Kinder, and I'm at Alma Deli with Claire Pathitis and Priyanka Lugani to discover about Ayurveda.
Hi, I'm Claire, and I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner. I'm called the Ayurveda Coach, and I'm really excited to be here today to talk to you about all things Ayurveda.
Hi, Claire, thank you so much. It's very nice to have you here. I'm Priyanka, I'm the founder of Alma. Alma is a social project where the aim is to discover the balance of the body and the soul. So we do this through the deli, where we prepare plant-based meals that are inspired by Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. And then we have the Alma Kids, where we teach the kids all about food and different aspects of life, and including activities like yoga. And then we have the labs, where we research the microbiome, the absorption of food, and also the ancient sciences, such as Ayurveda and Chinese medicine.
Are you finding that modern science is beginning to reveal the truth about the ancient sciences?
Yeah, I think that they're actually complementary. You know, I don't think there's a good or bad or right or wrong. I think that a lot of times people are creating, like they polarize, you know, oh, what is Ayurveda, what is Chinese medicine, like, it's hocus pocus, like it's pseudoscience. Well, no, it's been around. And what do you think, Claire?
Well, it has been around. It's been around for more than 10,000 years, as far as we know. We can trace it back to when it first was written in Sanskrit slokas or verses, which was 5,000 years ago. But I think, just as you're saying, all these things are complementary. But there are a way of perhaps addressing certain chronic illnesses that we may have. You know, people are quite sick at the moment. There's a lot of people with diabetes and obesity and arthritis, and mental health issues. There are answers and solutions in Ayurveda that can help all of these sort of chronic disorders.
And so that brings us to the big question.
Yes.
What is Ayurveda beyond the turmeric?
Beyond turmeric and herbal teas. Well, the word Ayurveda is a beautiful word in the Sanskrit, and it's broken into two parts. Aya meaning life, and Veda meaning science or knowledge. So it quite literally means the knowledge of life. So within Ayurveda and within these ancient texts that I talked about, we have a set of principles by which to live, to have optimum health and balance of mind and body. So that is Ayurveda very simply in a nutshell.
But I think then this is what I'm trying to say about the relationship between modern and ancient belief, is that in Ayurveda, do they make that connection between healthy mind and healthy body, because that is what's being revealed through the science.
Absolutely.
Now, revealing the microbiome and the connection between our gut and our brain.
Here's an interesting thing. So most people know about yoga. Most people know what yoga is. Not as many people know what Ayurveda is. But Ayurveda and yoga are sister sciences, and it's traditional in India to study Ayurveda first before taking up the practice of yoga, because Ayurveda is the science of the body, and only when the body has become fit is it ready to receive the spiritual knowledge of yoga. The aim in Ayurveda, the aim for me as a practitioner, is not only to help to heal the person in front of me, but to send them away with something a little bit more than what they came with, in terms of a higher consciousness, in terms of an awareness of perhaps what their purpose is in life, what they're going to go away and do. It's not simply just fixing the eczema or the helping with the weight loss. If you've really done your job well, then the true meaning of this work is to bring something, just to raise that consciousness a little bit more.
So what drew you to Ayurveda?
What drew me to Ayurveda? I first knew about it in my late teens. I was about 17 or 18. I suffered terribly with menstrual migraine. And I remember picking up a book and Ayurveda and reading about all these different things called doshas, vata, pitta, kapha. And I did the questionnaire and I tried to understand which one was I and how can this help relieve my migraine. I didn't really understand it at the time. But then later in life, so in my 30s, sort of had lived a little bit more, I'd had a baby, I lost my mother to ovarian cancer, and everything just sort of came together like a perfect storm, if you like. And I was sitting down one day and I was thinking, I need to do something more. Like, this isn't enough. What I was doing, I was a music agent, I was very successful, I was happily married, had a daughter, had a house, all those little boxes that you think you have to tick, but there was something, needed something more. And I remembered Ayurveda, and it just suddenly came to me like a little light bulb moment. Like, that's what I need to go and do. And I went away and I studied at the Ayurveda Institute in Croydon with Dr. Deepika there. And from the moment I sat down in that classroom and she started speaking to us, I knew it was the right thing, because she talked about this. You know, you're healing people. You're here as a servant to other people. It's not about you.
Totally.
It's about
We're all in service.
And that was a beautiful thing.
That's like the dharma of this life on earth. It's to be in service, like every one of us. And what about the soul? You speak about the body and the balance of the body and the balance of the mind. And what about the balance with the soul?
That's quite a difficult question to answer, because I think a lot of the time I think people think, you know, well, I do my meditation, I do my yoga, therefore my soul is taken care of. It's not for me to sit here and say how you get that balance. I think you go back to the very basic principles of Ayurveda, which is that you eat the correct foods. When you have that right nutrition, you produce something called ojas, which is the last part of nutrition in Ayurveda, and with ojas it's a kind of an immunity. It's something that gives you that sort of something higher, that compassion for your fellow man. You know, if someone has good ojas, they have that goodness in them.
Yeah.
And in Ayurveda you have that through, you know, living your life in a correct and nice way, doing no harm to others, eating nicely, respecting your body and respecting other people, I think. So that would be my take on how you look after your soul. I don't think there's an easy or quick answer or quick fix for that. I think it's all of us to search for what that means. Yeah.
But are you saying that the food that you eat can impact
on
your consciousness?
Absolutely. Yes, of course it can. First of all, the energy from the food that we eat. So there would be certain foods that you wouldn't eat. For example, you wouldn't eat lamb because of the energy associated with eating a baby animal. That's one way of looking at it. The other is, as I was telling Priyanka a little while ago, is when we eat some food, a very small amount of the goodness and the nutrition from that food is taken into the tissues of the body. So in Ayurveda we have 7 dhatu levels, 7 tissue levels that it has to go through: the plasma, the blood, the muscle, the fat, the bone marrow, and then finally the reproductive organs. When the food that we've eaten has gone through all those levels, we have 8 drops of ojas left. So the quality of the food that you're eating, the kind of foods that you're eating, imagine how good they need to be and how well your body and your digestive fire needs to be to get through all those tissue levels and create those 8 drops of ojas. And those ojas are that sort of essence that I was talking about that can help to raise our consciousness. It's like a microfine kind of liquid, something, these 8 drops.
An essence.
An essence, it is, yeah, exactly that, an essence of something. You can call it immunity if you like.
I like that, because it kind of actually reminds me of when we talk with Dr. Masuka, who's a professor, and his research is with the microbiome, and he talks about this liquid inside the stomach, the flora.
Yes.
Well, it's flora.
Yes, yes. And right now,
how that's the immunity.
Absolutely.
So.
And we know it's there. We know it's there. If you put 100 people in a room and you put a virus in the room, not everyone gets that virus. You know, some people have a stronger ojas or an immunity than others. So we know it exists.
Mm-hmm.
But these, as I was saying, you know, the Ayurveda is perhaps 10,000 or more years old, so they were understanding this principle and this concept. 10,000 or more years ago, which is incredible. And it came from, you know, Ayurveda came from the transmission of this cosmic understanding to these ancient sages in India who would meditate. They would sit and they would meditate, and they would sort of hear the information that the universe was sending them, and they would somehow be able to translate that into what things that I've just told you about these seven tissue levels and about these ojas and about this immunity, about this higher consciousness. And eventually it was written down about 5,000 years ago into Sanskrit slokas or verses which you recite. And in each one there's instructions on the keys to being in good health and being in balance.
So would ojas, would that sort of translate now to the microbiome?
I think when we talk about those sorts of things now and with Ayurveda, I think that actually links more closely to the Agni, or the digestive fire,
right.
The digestive enzymes, if you like. So we're kind of waking up to gut health and how important that is. We take our probiotics and our prebiotics and all these things, but in Ayurveda we call it the Agni, the digestive fire. And there's a shloka in the original Ayurvedic text which says the root of all disease is the result of an impaired Agni. So an incorrect digestive fire is the only cause of all disease.
Wow, so this was understood
however many thousand years ago. Exactly.
And now modern science is saying...
just about saying...
okay, microbiome, neurotransmitters, bacteria.
I understand it as the Agni in the digestive fire. And we see patients who have a digestive fire can work too high, so it's burning too much. It can be burning too low, Manda Agni, not working enough. It can be going up and down all over the place. If you're in perfect health, you have Sama Agni, which is perfect Agni. Everything is digested beautifully. You get your 8 drops of ojas. You have elimination of the toxins nicely every morning. And you're in good health. Mind and body is balanced. But not many of us have a balanced Agni or digestive fire.
Just explains it all.
Yeah. So this is what Priyanka's doing at the deli. She's providing food to balance our Agni.
Yes.
Totally. Yes. And since Alma has now started to cater to nurseries and schools to take care of the little ones' Agni and gut health, do you have any little tips that we could...
Yes, we do. I mean, your food, first of all, is beautiful because it contains so many lovely herbs and spices. You know, you have cumin, coriander, you know better than me, root ginger, all these sorts of things. These really help to kindle the digestive fire and help us digest our food nicely. There is one really nice tip that people can try themselves at home, adults or children, and it's using cumin and honey. So you would get the cumin seeds, whole cumin seeds, just buy a batch of them and roast them in a pan. You dry roast them on a frying pan for about 30 seconds, 1 minute, till it starts to smell nice, and then grind them up really finely. And you can keep that cumin powder in a jar in the kitchen. And then for children, you would give 1/4 teaspoon of the powder mixed with 1/2 teaspoon of honey after their lunch, after their dinner, and that's going to help to balance their digestive fires. Adults can have this too. Adults have it before a meal, so they'd have a bit more, like 1/2 teaspoon, 1/2 teaspoon of the cumin powder with the honey. And it's a really quick and easy little tip, and kids will eat it. I give it to my 3-year-old daughter. She says after her dinner, can I have my honey now? So she thinks she's just getting honey. I add the little bit of cumin powder in. And, you know, it's quite a nice fix for common childhood issues like constipation or going the other way, you know, if they suffer with diarrhea or bloating, any kind of tummy troubles. The cumin and honey is a really good thing to try.
So what does the cumin do?
But the cumin, I mean, it helps to... it helps to kindle that. I mean, think of that digestive fire as like a little fire burning, and it needs a little bit of something, a little bit of petrol or something to get it started. The honey is the vehicle for getting it in. You need something to take it there. no one's going to just eat cumin really on its own. So, but together they have, you know, kind of special properties to get into the stomach, take care of the digestive fire so that it works correctly and you get the nutrition from the food and you get your ojas.
Brilliant. So Claire, could you just go back a bit and right to the beginning and say...
Yes, so after we've established it's the science or the knowledge of life,
yeah.
We can break it down a little bit more simply now and look at the elements. So in Ayurveda, we believe there are 5 elements that make up everything in the universe. So you have ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And these 5 basic elements, they exist not just in human beings, they exist in all matter in the universe. And one good example, if you're trying to understand this concept, is to think about water. So water in its solid form is ice. So it's solid, it's earth, there's the earth element. When you leave ice, there's a latent heat or fire, there's the fire element in it, which causes it to melt. Becomes a liquid, becomes water. So you've had the earth, the fire, the water. It continues to evaporate, becomes steam, there's your air, and then it eventually dissipates into the atmosphere, you have ether. So that's an example of how everything is made up of these 5 elements. So Ayurveda takes that principle and it divides everybody into 3 types. Or 3 doshas, 3 body types. It doesn't really matter what your dosha is. It's like understanding your DNA or something. What matters is understanding which ones are out of balance and how to bring them back into balance.
So there's 3 doshas, right?
There are 3, and they're called Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And they are made up of these 5 elements I talked about. So the Vata dosha is made of air and ether. Pitta dosha is made of fire and water. And the Kapha dosha is made of water and earth. And we have all 3 in us, because we have all 5 elements in us, but they will be in different amounts.
So everybody has their own formula.
Everyone has their own formula, and that's why in Ayurveda it's beautiful, because there is no set. You can't just give everyone, do this, do this. Everyone is very unique. You have to look at the whole person. So Priyanka, we know through our discussions together that you're Vata predominantly with some Pitta.
Yeah.
I'm a Pitta Kapha person.
And
Elizabeth
like
I
Vata,
think you're probably
Pitta.
Vata, Pitta. Yeah, absolutely.
Very Vata.
So, and
I'm getting a bit worried.
But it's the way those elements interact in our bodies and how they interact with the elements in the universe. So a person like me, I talked about my menstrual migraines. I'm a Pitta Kapha person, so I was drawn to Pitta type foods, ate too many of them, get too stressed and too worked up about things. And that fire that's the element in the Pitta got very high in me. There was a lot of heat coming into the blood. So the migraine would come with the period, lots of heat rising into the head, headaches. Period would come, blood goes out, heat goes out. Migraine is gone. Seems quite simple, right?
Mm.
So the treatment that helped me get rid of my menstrual migraines was cooling my body and choosing cooling foods. So you go to the opposite of whichever dosha is aggravated. So I then understood that the fire element was aggravated. So I cut out chilies, tomatoes, carrots, root vegetables that take a lot of heat from the earth. And you know, and I had to take some different herbs and things like this to balance my agni, because my agni is producing too much heat, too many toxins. And so by doing that, by taking more cooling foods, getting rid of the heating foods, the Pitta element in me, it calms down inside. I now don't suffer with menstrual migraine.
So how do you have to balance that throughout the month? Or is it just...
Yes.
So you've completely changed the way you eat.
I've completely changed the way I eat, the way I, you know, lifestyle as well. You have to just calm things down. Just have to sit down sometimes, have a cup of tea, not get worked up about things. And eat the right foods. But it was a long process. You know, Ayurveda is not a quick fix. That's the other important thing. It's not covering up symptoms with, here, take this pill, it's about the root of the disorder. What was causing that to happen? Let's strip it right the way back. The root cause. If you eliminate the root cause, you eliminate the disorder. And that actually is very, that's a really key thing in Ayurveda. We're not covering up the cracks. We're not papering over things. It's where we differ from Western medicine too. I could have taken the hormone drugs, or I could have taken the strong painkillers for the rest of my life, but there was another way.
No,
Ayurveda
was
so healthy.
Oh, thanks.
I wanted to come back to this this little chat we had before Elizabeth came in, and you spoke about how you know that there's the seven
Datus.
The seven Datus, and I was talking to you about how I met Claire because of my own symptoms that I'm trying to heal, and one of the symptoms is a abnormally light period. And I've spent the last year trying to nourish my body to come to this balance through herbs, through modern day enzymes, and all of that. So I thought this wisdom that you shared earlier was it really resonated. So if you could elaborate again.
Yes. So the seven Datus or the seven tissues. I talked about those before as being the plasma, blood, the fat, muscle, bone marrow, and the reproductive organs. And each of those seven tissues takes 5 days to be nourished. So you have a meal, you have some nice coconut dal. Days 1 to 5, the plasma level, that first level, is getting the nourishment. Day 5 to 10, it goes to the blood, then into the other tissues all the way down. So it's like a 35-day cycle before that nourishment reaches the reproductive organs.
So I'm still benefiting from food that I ate four weeks ago?
Or not benefiting, depending what it was.
Either your body's getting more toxins or it's getting like the good stuff in.
Well, you know, but the quality has to be good and the agni has to be good to have being able to extract the right nutrients from that food, so that that last level, that reproductive tissues and organs, that level needs to get some of that quality of that nourishment from that food, because it's the last level to get anything. So it often really suffers.
So our digestive process
is
absolutely key to our health.
Absolutely.
And it isn't just
it is
kind of 24 hours till, you know, you next need to go to the loo. It's
no. And you know, and it's not about having a pint of celery juice or taking a turmeric capsule. These are, we understand the benefits of turmeric. We've talked about this in Priyanka. We know it's an anti-inflammatory, but you can't take the active ingredient.
It can also dry you out, no?
Just take it on its own, exactly. For Vata and Pitta people, it's very drying and very heating. So Ayurveda has the knowledge to say, no, you would have a pinch of turmeric with some milk or with some coconut milk with a little bit of black pepper, and you don't have it in great amounts. You know, so what I was trying to get at is the nutrition side of it is so important. There's too much kind of out there, just, again, everyone wants the quick fix.
Mm.
Do this juicing thing, you know, take this turmeric tablet. No, go back to basics. Sit down, have a nice meal, take time to eat with your loved ones, cook a meal for your loved ones, put love into it, because that's also nourishing you and your tissues. And we all need to stop and do that a little bit more, because I don't think we take enough time for it now. Everything is on the run. Grab a sandwich, eat it. Don't think about where that nourishment is going and all the levels it has to go through, how well our digestive fire needs to be working to process that sandwich that we just ate,
or
running to a meeting.
Or where it's come from.
Where it's come from, what energy there was, how it was prepared for us. Was it with love, or was it on a in a factory, in a conveyor belt?
But I think science is now showing that intention and focus actually does impact on the food on an energetic level. Which then impacts on its bioavailability.
Yes.
So how the food is prepared affects the nutritional value that we can then absorb.
Through energy? Through energy, or? or how?
You asking me?
Yeah.
I think through the energy. I think if I go to a pub and have a roast dinner, I eat it. It's chicken, it's vegetables, it's roast potatoes. It's the same food. If I go home and my husband cooks it for me with love, with the quality food that he's prepared, somehow that is more nourishing, isn't it? It's not always something you can put your finger on.
Of course, energy is invisible.
But it just is.
Yeah.
Like we all want, when we're sick, we want our mother's cooking, right? Mum's chicken noodle soup or whatever. There's all these kind of anecdotal things,
yeah.
But it goes back to that.
But what about energy and consciousness, right? Because what you're describing is essentially consciousness.
Yeah.
The consciousness of presence.
Yes.
Of preparing a meal with presence, with an intention.
Yes.
Yeah, which is what we... Well, it's our ethos at Alma, so it's nice to...
There you go.
It's inspired by Ayurveda, and this brings us...
Yeah.
This explains our intention much more. So thank you for that.
And also, when you come here into Alma, the menu on the wall says chakra boxes.
Yes.
I'd like you to explain that some more. What has inspired Priyanka to stick up a menu that says chakra boxes? Which is a bit mystifying.
You know, it was my vata. It just ran with me.
You want me to talk about the chakras in Ayurveda?
Yeah, and how the food then can actually impact on our health in that way.
So Elizabeth has two highlights that she loves to touch upon.
Yes,
she
loves
the biome.
Yes,
and the chakras.
Yeah, but I think it's so fascinating though the microbiome and how the bacteria communicate with our brain through the neurotransmitters in our gut. I mean,
it's
extraordinary.
Really,
and this is what I'm talking about: modern science explaining things that people intuitively understood, possibly.
Yeah.
Would you say that was true?
I think it is, because I think people had wisdom then. They did have an intuition and a wisdom. You see animals in the wild, they know which plant to go and eat if they are, if they're feeling unwell. I remember I used to watch my cat go and eat some grass when she was a little bit sick. That's an intuition of understanding what food we need to have when we're unwell. So yes, I do think it's exactly that. Who knows what we were like 5,000, 10,000 years ago and how much better in tune we were with the universe. I don't want to get too kind of
I when I spent some time in India, I remember I was in the Himalayas and they talk about the Vedas, they speak about the universe, the cosmic nature,
Nature. Yes, yeah.
So what is our cosmic nature? I mean, this is not being abstract or alternative or off the beaten track, because in India, the ancient wisdom, and even in Chinese medicine, a lot of it connects back to our cosmic nature.
Yeah.
What is the cosmic nature?
Because then we get into kind of Ayurvedic philosophy, which is another whole nother thing, complicated thing, where there are two energies, like a female energy and a male energy, but you can't even really give them that name.
Like the Shiva and Shakti?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a universal energy.
It's a
yin and yang.
It is yin and yang in Chinese medicine. And from there, then we start to get consciousness and then... everything else, then the body, the ego, all these other things come to life. We need to do a follow-up podcast.
Sure.
We need to go deeper.
Mm. What I liked though was how you also touch upon the male and female energy, the Shiva Shakti or yin and yang, and how in ancient sciences or philosophies, whatever you may want to call it or label it, there's this wisdom of this balance that is created through the two that are working in union together,
yes,
in coherency.
Yes.
And obviously in modern day medicine or science, we don't talk about the yin and yang, the male and female. It's just like, oh, your liver, or your kidney, or your heart, And for instance, in Chinese medicine, you have like complementary, the yin and yang, and then the heart and the lungs are yin and yang together, and it's very interesting. That energy is overactive. Let's
mm-hmm.
balance that,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you also go a bit deeper yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, okay, what can I do to balance myself? Because
mm-hmm.
that's essentially what it is. It's a
then I think that comes back to the doshas and the elements. So when you know, often when people are very anxious and they can't sleep, it's the Vata dosha, it's that air and the ether kind of creating a bit of a whirlwind of energy. You know, Vata is like a naughty child that whirs around our system, creating havoc. So you have to bring it back, you have to ground yourself, you have to come back down, you have to eat something that's warm and nourishing and heavy. No good going and eating like some chia flakes or seeds or something that will just exacerbate the lightness of the air of the Vata. It's complementary, it's very, very similar in Chinese medicine. So we look to balance by going to the opposite side, the
mm-hmm.
yin, the yang.
It's
Vata's
like
air and ether. We go to kapha, we choose water and earth. That will ground your Vata.
And what are the physical traits of a Vata character, of a kapha character,
yes.
or a pitta character?
So, please don't anyone be offended by what I'm about to say, because as I said, we do have all of them within us, but typically Vata, a dominant person, will either be very, very tall or very small, slight frame. They often are more sort of underweight, so they'll be thinner. And, you know, out of balance, they will suffer with anxiety, sleeplessness. They feel the cold more easily than others. Joint problems, you know, osteoarthritis, brittle bone, that sort of thing. And their temperament is one of a lot of creativity, of free-spiritedness. They're, you know, big thinkers. Maybe not so much doers, but they like to think about lots of different ideas all at once. And out of balance, the Vata types, they, you know, have a lot of anxiety perhaps, or sleeplessness. They can suffer with constipation or lack of periods. In balance, they also have lots of really wonderful qualities. In balance, they are wonderful, creative, loving, free spirits. So they need to have that freedom, not to be too caged in. They need to be able to express creativity and freedom. Big talkers, social, outgoing. That's the Vata. Is it ringing any bells, ladies?
No idea.
What are you
thinking? We're not Vata, are we?
Okay, so the Pitta dominant person, typically they have a very average physique. They're quite strong digestive fires. They can eat a lot of food without really having to worry about putting on weight. Out of balance, a Pitta person can be angry, aggressive, controlling and judgmental. They do tend to like things to be just so. They're very organized sort of people, but they can kind of take that a bit too far. When they're in balance, you know, they have a lot of intelligence, a lot of drive and ambition. They can be great and compassionate leaders when they're in balance. The kapha dominant person, their physique, it tends to be sort of a rounder type of body, well developed. They have warm, sort of oily skin, thick hair, and they'll tend to have a slower digestive fire, so a tendency to put on weight a little bit more. They like their food, they like their comforts and their sweet things. Cake and tea. A cup of tea and a piece of cake is lovely for them. They like to sleep a lot, so you know, they're just a little bit slower, but they are very loving, they're very loyal, in balance. Out of balance, that can also cross over into being kind of suffocating, holding on to things, jealousy, that sort of thing. If you want to picture the three doshas, I have Dr. Deepika, who taught me, had a nice little story to imagine. You need to have a bridge built. So you send the Vata person to build the bridge, because they'll have all the ideas about it should look like this and be this colours and do da-da-da-da and this and this and this. But they won't get anything done. So you need to send the Pitta to say, look, I know you've got your ideas, but this is the schedule, and this is what we're doing, and this is when. If you leave the Vata and the Pitta together, they'll just have a big argument and it will all end in tears. So you have to bring the Kapha person to bring the tea and the cake and say every now and then, everyone just have a sit down. The bridge is going to be fine. Don't worry, it will get built. And then at the end of the day, you will have your bridge. But you need all three. And that's why we have all three doshas in us, because we need all those three. And you need to have friends that are all those three. So if you're a super Vata person, Priyanka,
yeah. You
need nice Kapha friends to bring you tea and cake and keep you calm.
Okay. I think my mom's Kapha.
There you go.
Okay, great.
Before you disappear, Claire, can I ask you? So the food that we eat can balance those doshas.
Exactly. You just need to know and have a little bit more of an understanding as to which ones are out of balance and therefore what to eat. But it's absolutely, it can be as simple as that, as making the right choices for your dosha imbalance.
Food and balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What's more important?
Yeah.
I mean, in all the things we do, the most important thing is that food that we're putting in our body and how well we're digesting it and eliminating it. If you do all those things, everything else will tick along.
And how nutritious it is in the first
and
place.
And how nutritious it is. And was it prepared with love?
Thank you so much for coming into Alma.
Thank you so much, Priyanka.
Thank you and have a nice evening.
Thank you very much.
Gorgeous Lives on Radio Gorgeous.